still acute, as agencies and officials rush to find survivors in the rubbles and temperatures drop. The earthquake compounds catastrophe upon catastrophe in Syria and Turkey. It is likely to exacerbate those that already exist while creating new, unpredictable ones. The United Nations Secretary General says Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has agreed to open two more border crossings to facilitate relief aid delivery to the northern part of the quake-hit country, which is held by militants. Antonio Guterres announced the development after Assad approved the use of Bab al-Salam and al-Ra'i crossings, which link Turkey to northwestern Syria for outreach purposes. In line with the presidential decree, the crossings would be open for an initial period of 3 months to allow for the timely delivery of humanitarian aid. In addition to authorizing transit through the border passages, the UN chief said facilitating humanitarian access, accelerating visa approvals, and easing travel between hubs will allow more aid to go in faster. The announcement was made after the UN Security Council held a closed-door session on the humanitarian situation in Syria following the quake. The 7.8 magnitude quake that hit Turkey and neighboring Syria last Monday has so far claimed tens of thousands of lives. The biggest part of the fatalities that have been caused in Syria have occurred in the territory which is being held by Takfiri terrorist groups. The approval issued by Assad came after the UN lamented that an anti-government group, which has been designated as terrorist by the international community, was preventing aid consignments from being delivered to the quake-hit areas in the northern part of Syria. A spokesman for the UN's Humanitarian Aid Office said on Sunday that there were issues with approval by the group, which was identified as the terrorist outfit Hayat Tahrir al-Sham, or HTS. Previously, a number of captured Takfiri terrorists had confessed to close cooperation to U.S. military forces in Syria. There have also been reports of U.S. supporting Takfiri terrorists and helping them to expand across Syria. Also on Sunday, Reuters quoted an HTS source who spoke on the condition of anonymity as confirming that the terror outfit will not let in shipments from government-held parts of Syria, alleging, "We won't allow the government to take advantage of the situation to show they are helping."
Your option, our task. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Tourism. In the name of God, Salam, and welcome to the program. Dear listeners, we are with you with the first episode of a new series, Food Tourism. In this series, we will try to make you briefly familiar with food customs and traditions among different Iranian ethnicities. We hope that you will enjoy this series and one day you will happen to come to Iran to taste delicious Iranian cuisine. Stay with us, please. Tourism is one of the most lucrative industries in the world. It has found a very important status in the economy and policy of various nations as an effective factor of sustainable development. Sustainable development has been used in the literature of development and has been strongly pursued in developing countries. The World Commission on Environment and Development, WCED, was founded in 1987. In the same year, it released its statement called Our Common Future, whereby it gave a specific definition of sustainable development. WCED says that sustainable development is the development which can fulfill the needs of the present generation without jeopardizing the ability of the next generations in securing their needs. As a matter of fact, sustainable development puts forward solutions to prevent issues such as destruction of natural resources, destruction of biosystems, pollution, climate change, increase of population, injustice, and low quality of life of humans in the present and future. Therefore, activists of tourism try to put tourism within the framework of sustainable development to pay full attention to the environmental, economic, social, and cultural aspects of tourism industry. Tourism industry is an effective factor for decrease of poverty and establishment of social justice. But further development of this industry requires awareness of individuals of various aspects of tourism and its relation with other parameters of sustainable development. Accordingly, tourism has to be planned in a way that, while it is economically profitable, its destructive effect on the environment of the host country reduces to almost zero. Dear listeners, it is interesting to note that tourism has different kinds, such as historical tourism, sports tourism, health tourism, ecotourism, and so on. However, since human beings are interested in new experiences, national and local foods have been highly welcomed by tourists across the world. Food culture and habits of host country have gained importance for many tourists. In other words, food builds a strong bond between the history and culture of the host nation and tourists. Food and drink are today considered as among the main symbols to introduce the culture, tradition, behavior, and ecological views of various ethnicities. Food tourism is an industry and was used in 2001 for the first time. Eric Wolf, manager of the International Tourism Unity, used it in his article Food and Culinary Tourism. The article changed into a book later on and contained useful information about tourism for students and activists of the field. Experts of demography maintain that foods and drinks have a special position in customs and temperaments of individuals. Thus, food is considered as a key element in demography, anthropology, and civilization. Food tourism has had a lucrative market for the past years. Approximately $200 billion of the world economy owes its profit to food tourism, and every tourist pays $150 to $200 for food during his travel. Iran is very rich in terms of food and drinks. This country enjoys one of the richest tablecloths in the world, with over 2,500 traditional and local foods and 109 drinks. Iranian cuisine has been the third known cuisine in the world after the Chinese and Roman ones. The variety of food in Iran is very high, and every region and ethnicity has its own specific food and drink. Many of these ethnicities and subcultures have numerous foods and drinks. For sure, climate variety is an effective factor in the structure and ingredients of foods. Iranians, in addition to various foods and drinks, enjoy specific customs and traditions for cooking, eating, and drinking them. This has its roots in the ancient culture of this nation. Well, that marks the end of this episode. Thanks for being with us, and God bless you.
Economic divide.
There are massive layoffs happening in the tech sector in the U.S. Some believe this is restricted to just the tech sector. Others believe it may spread to other sectors of the U.S. economy as well. Yet the number of layoffs in the hundreds of thousands is pretty shocking. Why such large number of layoffs and the health of the U.S. economy as a whole? Well, that's the topic for this edition of Economic Divide. Coming up in this program, we're going to take a look at these tech layoffs. Companies like Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and Meta, some of the noteworthy ones, around 200,000 employees. The most, 70,000, was recorded for 2022. Let's see how many there are. Stay tuned to the program. Of course, recession fears and inflation, the reasons that has been cited so far. Then the layoff figures, we're going to take a look at those figures, why there are such large numbers of them, and also the economic impact, and why even profitable tech companies are experiencing the number of layoffs that they are. Then the other industry layoffs, which puts in the contagion factor into focus. Then something called career cushioning. We'll tell you what that is. And of course, productivity, why that is also under threat.
The U.S. economy has been plagued recently with widespread layoffs in the country's technology sector. Google, Microsoft, Amazon, and other tech giants have fired thousands of their employees over gloomy economic prospects. Just recently, Google's parent company, Alphabet, laid off 12,000 workers, equivalent to 12% of its workforce. In November 2022, Meta said it was cutting more than 11,000 jobs. In November 2022, Amazon announced plans to cut over 18,000 jobs. The cuts are being felt across the company's sprawling operations, from physical retail technology and grocery stores to robotics and drone delivery, and even in cloud computing. And just recently, Zoom announced plans to cut above 1,300 workers, or 15% of its workforce. Zoom experienced a huge boom during the pandemic when people were forced to work from home and turned to video chat software. Dell is also laying off 5% of its workforce, or about 6,650 employees. Furthermore, Microsoft is reducing 10,000 workers through March 31 as the software maker braces for slower revenue growth. Other digital and tech giants such as Shopify, Twitter, Salesforce, Netflix, and Snap are also reducing their workforce.
You're also likely to see more continued job cuts, specifically within tech. There was some hiring and hospitality. That's all positive. But within technology companies, you've seen Amazon, Facebook, Microsoft all cut between 5 and 13% of their workforces in just the last couple of months. So that trend is likely to continue.
It's time now for a social media post. Many people are alarmed at what is happening. They're freaked out. I mean, people are just, you know, they're losing their jobs, not just in the tech sector, but there are other sectors as well. So there's a cross-section of some of the things that we picked for you in this section. First off, the layoffs in the tech sector were so large and happening so much and so fast that there was the online entry in Twitter, which was created in order to track this in real time. Layoffs.fyi, for your information, is the name, which, as it described, tracks tech startup layoffs, listing of employees that were laid off to give them exposure to companies that were still hiring. Moving on to our next post, it's so disorienting to see the insane number of tech layoffs recently, and then to see today that the U.S. added 517,000 jobs, pushing unemployment down to the lowest level in 50 years. Can't tell if I'm just in a tech echo chamber or if I'm missing something else here. That is rather confusing, isn't it, when you have that many jobs to have been added for the month. Next up, we took a look at a website. Could tech layoffs spread to the rest of the U.S. economy? Silicon Valley firms are facing the music, cutting several hundred thousand jobs after years of incredible growth. Economists are divided over whether the U.S. economy is heading for a recession and soaring unemployment. And then, don't tell me the tech layoffs in the U.S. is not related to the advent of AI. That's artificial intelligence, of which we then went and picked this entry where the World Economic Forum said that AI will take 85 million jobs out of the market in 5 years. It does say that it's going to create 90 million jobs, as you're about to find out based on us looking deeper into it. As the global economy slowly recovering from the current depression, World Economic Forum, WEF, has predicted that innovative technology will destroy 85 million jobs at mid-sized to large businesses, but at the same time, it expects 97 million jobs to be generated over the next 5 years. Obviously, the result is a wake-up call for reskilling with data literacy to grasp the opportunity in the future. I don't know about you, but if 85 million jobs are going to go off the market because of AI, that would be something that is very alarming in a sense. We'll have to wait and see if that happens. And that's supposed to happen in the year 2020, by the year 2025. All right, maybe a good topic for another program. Let me introduce our guest for this edition of Economic Divide. Jack Rasmus joins us. He is a teacher of economics at St. Mary's College in California, a rather lengthy resume. He's also the author and producer of various nonfiction and fictional works, including the books The Scourge of Neoliberalism, U.S. Economic Policy from Reagan to Bush, and Alexander and Hamilton is the publisher, The Origins of the Fed, among others, of books that he has published. So obviously, he is a very busy man, to say the least. Jack Rasmus, welcome to Economic Divide. So Google, Microsoft, Amazon, other tech companies, as you're well aware, laying off employees. We're looking at 70,000 employees in the last year. Those figures have been revised, actually. It could be a lot more. It is a lot more, 200,000 so far for the year 2023. The reasons given, uncertain economic conditions, inflation. Why is it that the tech sector is seeing these layoffs? Even companies who are still making lots of money, but they're still laying off people. What is the reasoning behind it?
Well, you know, during the immediate post COVID period when the economy was opening, the tech companies really overinvested and overhired to some extent. And now they see that the U.S. economy is supposed to slow down dramatically this year. Actually, it slowed down dramatically last year already, and that's why they started layoffs last year. U.S. GDP December to December grew only 1% last year. I mean, that's really a very weak recovery given the fact that the U.S. During COVID spent about $7 trillion in stimulus. About $3 trillion by Congress and another $4 trillion by the Federal Reserve. to get a growth rate of only 1% is really an indication that the economy is slowing down. It's in trouble, and the techs see that, and they are, their stock price began to weaken. And one way you boost your stock price is to cut your costs.
All right, cutting costs, is that going to do it, though? I mean, are these companies going to continue to lay people off? That's something that we need to look at. Let me introduce our next guest for this segment of the Q&A, Marsha Baker, editor at Executive Intelligence Review. News Service joins us. Marsha Baker, welcome to Economic Divide. It's probably going to be quicker to list the companies that haven't laid off workers this year. We're taking a look at a lot of layoffs. What do layoffs in these large numbers mean? And it's not just for the companies in the tech sector. We're also looking at layoffs in the wider U.S. economy. How is it going to impact the rest of the U.S. economy, do you think?
Well, the layoffs in the tech industry reflect the general downturn. But in basic everyday necessities, you have dysfunction. You have dysfunctional sectors of the U.S. economy. Two examples. In soft infrastructure, and by that we mean hospital care as well as education and other important support jobs in the economy, you have major problems. In only a few weeks ago, 10,000 nurses in New York City threatened to go on strike if you didn't increase the staff at the hospitals. In the Midwest in the U.S., you have hospitals shutting down throughout your major farm states of Nebraska, Iowa, Kansas, and you have whole towns becoming ghost towns. Now, hard infrastructure is also seeing dysfunction. You've had passenger delays of up to 20 hours on the Washington, D.C. to Florida train, on the Philadelphia to Chicago train. And that's two sectors of soft and hard infrastructure in the economy.
Time now for the Info News section of the program, where we take news with an economic flavor from around the world to present to you, four of them. First up, let's take a look at oil and how it's doing in terms of what we're looking at here. There's an oil price surge that we picked out. At least that's what Goldman Sachs is predicting. What it has said is that sanctions on Russia, along with insufficient investment into production, will cause a serious problem next year. This will be serious because Goldman Sachs is saying oil is going to surge past $100 per barrel. Now, let's take a look at the dollar in terms of how it's doing. This particular entry points towards that, where it says the dollar days are numbered. Dr. Doom says U.S. dollar reign is ending. A bipolar currency regime is likely to replace the current greenback-based unipolar one, says this famed economist by the name of Nouriel Roubini. Now, some of you may be familiar with this economist. All right, in terms of somewhat along those lines, the UAE and India are ditching the dollar. India has done that to bypass the sanctions on Russian oil. Now, local refiners are reportedly using the UAE dirham to pay for most of the Russian oil bought from Dubai-based traders. So you can see the motion to ditch the dollar is in almost full effect. We've covered that on a number of occasions here in this program. Next up, let's take a look at how Pakistan is doing vis-a-vis the IMF, because we know that it's opting for a loan. Now, based on this one particular entry, the Pakistani Prime Minister has warned about the IMF and the conditions for the bailout that the country needs so desperately. Now, he has said, quote, "I will not go into the details. Conditions are beyond imagination, and we have to agree to it." That's what he has said. Doesn't really reveal much, but it does point to the fact that the IMF conditions, not only are they severe to begin with, but in the case of Pakistan, they're very much on the extreme side. Those were the economic news that we picked.
You're listening to Economic Divide. The series looks at the financial health of the economies around the world and its impact on countries. You can listen to Economic Divide on Mondays and Tuesdays on IRIB English Radio.
Time now for the in-depth section of the program. The tech sector layoffs in the U.S. has become a main worry for the economy of that country, and those who don't believe that or claim that it's not a big deal, well, they're not facing the music. We can tell you that much, and we're about to prove that in one way or another. First of all, hardly a day goes by that there aren't announcements of mass layoffs at tech firms. Let's take a look at what has happened for the year 2022 as a whole. And there's a visualization from the beginning of the year of January 2022 all the way through what we have, I believe, is November, actually, if I'm not mistaken. The number of layoffs altogether were about 200,000 based on the count that we have there. Again, that's approximate. Let it be said that this figure depends on what sources you're going by because they are varied. Next up, let's take a look at the top numbers in terms of the companies that laid off the most based on what we have. For example, Salesforce, 8,000. You have 10,000 at Microsoft. That's a considerable number. 12,000 at Google. This ranks the largest in its company history. And then 18,000 at Amazon. You also have companies like IBM and music streaming service Spotify. They have joined the chopping wave. And that happened when we recorded this program the week before, which brought the total to more than 200,000 in terms of the pink slips that were issued in the tech industry. Now, this is a warning for the economy as a whole, and it's yet another signal that consumer spending boom is fading. Now, let's move to this figure, which points to what sectors within the tech industry is having the most layoffs. And here's something that becomes very clear. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about this. E-commerce, as you can see there, the first bar there is where most of the layoffs have been registered. Now, this particular reading is for the window between December 16, 2022 to January 15, 2023. And then finally, for those who are skeptical or maybe they don't have a great deal of, are not giving a great deal of importance to these tech layoffs, here's a question they should be asking themselves. To what extent has the tech industry contributed to the various sectors of society? Well, as you can see over here, these are the different industries, and this is just a sampling from communication to media to entertainment, politics, finance. The tech sector impacts almost every sector of the economy, if you really think about it. Do you agree with that? Send us your comments or questions. Okay, let me bring in Jack Rasmus again. He's the author and the economics professor who rejoins us. Jack Rasmus, welcome back to Economic Divide. The possibilities of layoffs happening in other sectors is my question to you. I'm taking a look at what's happening here. Scaling back of employees obviously affects businesses in that particular community at a minimum, since others feel that they should watch out on how they spend their money. How much of a contagion effect are we seeing here?
Yeah, well, industries and companies that are very sensitive, or as we in economics say, elastic, sensitive to ongoing continuing inflation, which I think is going to surge again in the spring on supply side issues that are coming, particularly energy and oil. We can already see that beginning to happen. If you are very sensitive to price increases, and they've been going on for a year now, a lot of these companies and industries, particularly in the service sector, trying to somehow absorb the inflation, and they've been raising prices, but the price increases are at a point where consumers now are backing off. They're not going to be able to afford some of these price increases. And that means these companies are going to have to look to cut costs, and they're going to do it, in services industries, the big cost factor is labor. So they're going to start laying people off in services, I think.
Oh, wait, that sounds logical, what our guest Jack Rasmus there said. Marsha Baker rejoins us, editor at Executive Intelligence Review. Let's find out what she thinks. Marsha Baker, welcome back. Just talked to our other guest, Jack Rasmus, regarding how these tech layoffs, if they're only particular to the tech industry, or does it affect the, or is it a reflection of the wider economy as a whole? Because we're noticing, obviously, some of the biggest factors to affect the U.S. economy, like all these all this talk about a recession. Do you think that there's going to be a contagion effect? The other industries are going to be affected with these layoffs, and the sectors in particular be affected by this?
We are seeing in the United States retrenchment, that is contraction of all kinds in all sectors, except for certain hotspots of military industrial complex spending, which is at record levels of close to $900 billion in the annual budget. But that cannot underpin the economy in the U.S. or the transatlantic. You have whole local communities that cannot even fund their budget, for example, to buy chlorine or chemicals to treat their water.
U.S.-based aerospace company Boeing has also announced plans to lay off around 2,000 workers in finance and human resources this year. The layoffs come as digital advertisers are cutting back on spending and rising inflation curbs consumer spending. Layoffs in the U.S. has hit a more than two-year high last month as technology firms cut jobs at the second highest pace on record to prepare for a possible recession. Unemployment rate remains at 3 to 4%, the lowest in half a century, yet interest rates remain higher than they have been in decades. GDP grew 2.5% last year, although many economists expect it to be slower this year. An employment report last week showed U.S. job growth accelerated sharply in January.
The current now economy is still doing okay. Consumers are spending money. They have still have a lot more money. Their confidence is dropping. Their balance sheet's in good shape. Home equity is in good shape. Jobs are plentiful. That's pretty good. That's the now. It's being eroded by confidence, by inflation, and the excess savings is coming down. But I think a far more concern, when I talk about potential storm clouds, they're still there. QT and the effect of interest rates, inflation may not come down like people think. Rates may have to go a little higher. But really, in particular, the war in Ukraine and what it's doing to oil markets, gas markets, food markets, poorer nations around the world.
While the unemployment rate hit a low of 3.4%, pointing to a tight labor market. The strong economic data suggests the recession may come later than previously expected, but remains likely. Analysts believe although market-based measures of financial conditions have eased somewhat recently, financial conditions are still tight by historical standards.
The tech layoffs are surely a worrying sign for the U.S. economy, no matter how you look at it. Now that we're in the new year, how will things be looking for this year? After all, at a minimum, many employees fear what lies ahead for them in 2023. First, look at how many jobs were lost in the year 2022. Considering full 2022, employers announced plans to cut over 363,000 jobs, up 13% from the over 321,000 cuts announced in 2021. When it comes to what lies ahead for 2023, the outlook is rather gloomy. One in three companies anticipate laying off 30% or more of workforce this year, and 61% of business leaders say their organizations will likely have layoffs in 2023, and 70% of companies are likely to implement a hiring freeze this year. And these projections are not limited to just a few sources. This particular source has confirmed what we just said, additionally citing how U.S. layoffs have hit two-year high in January 2023, with experts predicting there will be more in store. U.S. layoffs hit two-year high in January 2023. Experts predict more in store. And these are other industries that have slashed their workforce. Topping the list would be the consumer sector in the U.S. economy that has slashed over 19,000 jobs in 2022. Retail followed suit by slashing 13,000 positions in January 2023. Financial firms also jumped ship and terminated over 10,000 jobs last month. One thing we haven't discussed in this program is why are layoffs happening in the first place. In terms of the technology sector, they have laid off workers due to an impending recession. Other factors noted to strengthen the functioning of their core structure. But then there is the overlooked fact that points to the fact that the U.S. economy will not be doing well, which will obviously involve layoffs. The Federal Reserve isn't the only one tightening credit. Commercial banks are tightening lending standards. Tighter regulatory constraints applied only to banks are one reason, but the bigger reason is the interest rates. The layoffs occur due to the high inflation and rising interest rates, the knock-on effect, the shrinkage of the consumer and corporate spending. With the Federal Reserve expected to continue on its rate hiking path to tame inflation, more layoffs are only implemented from U.S. companies. That does it for this section. Please let us know if it was helpful or not.
So far this year, 77,000 tech sector employees have been laid off. We checked that before we came on for this recording. Are these layoffs simply a long overdue realignment, as they like to call it, of the workforce of these companies? I mean, how can 200,000 layoffs, 200,000 of them, not affect the U.S. economy as a whole when that many people are taken out of the economy when it comes to spending, which means many less factory orders? That means less employees on the supply chains. I mean, can't forget the knock-on effect that's happening here. All of this contributes to an economy that's not going to have as much growth. If you disagree with us, send us your comments or questions. Unfortunately, we're fresh out of time. We do appreciate it. Of course, any critiques, we appreciate that even more. From Mikko Vetahoe and the team, it's goodbye until the next Economic Divide.
Your option for today and a better tomorrow. Our internet address is parstoday.ir/en.
IRIB English Radio. In the limelight.
The Zionist regime of Israel has expanded its illegal settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories, while the international community considers these settlements to be illegal and has repeatedly demanded that all construction should stop. We take a look at some of the world media and press's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The English website of Al Jazeera Television Network has covered this story and tells us more. The Israeli regime's far-right cabinet has decided to legalize 9 settler outposts in the occupied West Bank in sheer defiance of the outcry from the international community and Palestinians who want an end to the Israeli regime's illegal settlement activities. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's extremist cabinet announced the decision on Sunday, 12th of February, retroactively authorizing the outposts that had been already set up by Israeli settlers over the past years without the regime's so-called approval. The retroactive authorization of the outposts marks the first such step to be taken by Israel's new cabinet, which took over in late December, featuring a combination of hard-right and ultra-orthodox parties. The Israeli Prime Minister has described expansion of the regime's illegal settlements as his cabinet's top priority in order to buy the extremist party's loyalty. However, the international community views the settlements, hundreds of which have been built across the occupied West Bank since Tel Aviv's occupation of the territory in 1967, as illegal due to their construction in the occupied territories. Also on Sunday, 12th of February, a statement from Benjamin Netanyahu's office said a planning committee was to convene in the coming days to approve new settler units and mass construction of more units within the existing settlements. The far-right Israeli finance minister, Bezalel Smotrich, put the number of units at a whopping 10,000. Reacting to the Israeli cabinet's decision, Nabil Abu Rodeyna, the spokesman for the Palestinian Authority president Mahmoud Abbas, condemned the move as a provocation and a recipe for further tension and escalation. Nabil Abu Rodeyna also announced the regime's plans to staggeringly increase the number of settler units, adding that all unilateral measures are rejected in accordance with the resolutions of international legitimacy and bilateral agreements. Abu Rodeyna also stressed the illegality of all Israeli settlements as they violate international law and UN Security Council resolutions, including Resolution 2334. The Palestinian Ministry of Foreign Affairs and Expatriates also weighed in on the issue, issuing a statement saying that the Israeli cabinet's decision amounted to a dangerous escalation. The statement added the move was also a total and open war against the Palestinian people, the occupied city of Al-Quds, and the residents of the city and other holy sites. The Reuters news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. An extremist Israeli regime minister from Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu's far-right cabinet wants to see more Jewish settlements constructed across the occupied Palestinian territories. Israel's hardline security minister Itamar Ben-Gvir said on Tuesday, 14th of February, "Building new settlements is Israel's mission and doctrine." Following a statement of concern from Washington and from European countries, France, Germany, Italy and Britain, over the decision on legalizing 9 settler outposts, he claimed in a video message, "The land of Israel belongs to the people of Israel." On Sunday, 12th of February, the Israeli regime's far-right cabinet legalized 9 settler outposts in the occupied West Bank in sheer defiance of the outcry from the international community and from Palestinians who want an end to the Israeli regime's illegal settlement activities. Itamar Ben-Gvir said he wanted to go even further than the decision announced on Sunday, saying 9 settlements are not enough and Israel wants much more. He said, "This is our mission, this is our doctrine. 9 settlements is nice, but it's still not enough. We want much more." The extremist Israeli minister said Europeans and Americans should stop worrying. Meanwhile, the foreign ministers of Britain, France, Germany, Italy and United States have all said they're deeply troubled by Israel's illegal settlement activities and expansion plans. They said in a statement, we strongly oppose unilateral actions which will only serve to exacerbate tensions between Israelis and Palestinians and undermine efforts to achieve a negotiated two-state solution. Hossein al-Sheikh, a senior Palestinian official, welcomed the joint statement. Al-Sheikh said, "We demand that words be turned into deeds. The Israeli regime has already authorized new settlement outposts and pledged to construct new settler units in the occupied West Bank." Meanwhile, the Israeli regime has demolished another Palestinian home in a neighborhood of eastern Al-Quds, as its forces detain over a dozen Palestinians in several areas across the occupied West Bank. According to media reports, Israeli bulldozers, accompanied by troops, raided the neighborhood of Jabal al-Mukhabar at dawn on Monday, 13th of February, and cordoned off the house before demolishing it. They claimed the house belonging to Avam Bashir had been constructed without a permit. The so-called permits are almost impossible to obtain. Israel sometimes orders Palestinian owners to demolish their own houses or pay the cost of the demolition. The Tel Aviv regime plans to force out Palestinian families from the Sheikh Jarrah neighborhood and several other neighborhoods of eastern Al-Quds in an attempt to replace them with illegal Israeli settlers. The Palestinian Wafa news agency has also covered this story and tells us more. A panel of United Nations experts has called on the international community to take action to stop systematic housing demolition, arbitrary displacement, and forced evictions of Palestinians from the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Wafa news agency cited experts as making the plea in a statement on Monday, 13th of February, after media reports that the Israeli regime demolished 132 Palestinian structures across 38 communities in the occupied West Bank in January of 2023, a 135% increase compared to the same period in 2022. The statement said the systematic demolition of Palestinian homes, erection of illegal Israeli settlements, and systematic denial of building permits for Palestinians in the occupied West Bank amounts to domicide. The experts reiterated their concern over the situation in Masafer Yatta area, where over 1,100 Palestinian residents remain at imminent risk of forced eviction, arbitrary displacement, and demolitions of their homes, their livelihood, water and sanitation structures. The experts say direct attacks on the Palestinian people's homes, schools, livelihoods, and water resources are nothing but Israel's attempts to curtail the Palestinian people's right of self-determination and to threaten their very existence. Experts say Israel's tactics of forcibly displacing and evicting the Palestinian population appear to have no limits. In occupied city of eastern Al-Quds, tens of Palestinian families also face imminent risk of forced eviction and displacement due to discriminatory zoning and planning regimes that favor Israeli settlement expansion. The act that is illegal under international law and amounts to a war crime.
As-salamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common. This is the part of the speech delivered by the leader of the Islamic Revolution during a meeting with a number of elegists, eulogists, and religious poets in the Imam Khomeini Husseiniya on January 12, 2023. The meeting took place one day before the anniversary of the birth of Lady Fatima Zahra Salamullah Aliha. An elegist should be concerned with guiding his audience rather than earning money, fame, social status, and such things. Now, I am not saying that you should forget about these things completely. We are not like that. We are weak human beings, and we cannot forget about ourselves completely. Nonetheless, you need to give such matters less attention. Your main concern should be to guide people. When you memorize a poem or write a poem down to recite it later, when you accept an invitation to recite at a gathering, or when you sit before an audience, all you should think about is that you want to guide your audience. That is the first condition. The second condition is enlightenment. How can a being become a creator if it is not derived from the creator?
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
If a person lacks solid fundamental wisdom within himself, it is unlikely that he will be able to bring enlightenment to others. We need to develop ourselves. You are young. You have the patience and the time. Study and read books. Books on both poetry and prose. Read the books written by Martin Mutahhari. Read books on morals as well as the books of hadith and books of tafsir. We have good books of tafsir. Even if you are not fluent in Arabic, there are very good Farsi books on tafsir today that are easily accessible to everyone. Another condition is that you need to keep yourselves updated. The situation in the world is changing on a daily basis. Be up to date. Keep an analysis of the world's events in your mind and in your thinking. My friends, today we are either facing an important turning point in history, or we are moving inside the heart of an important turning point in history. The latter is probably a more accurate description. The world is changing. Major changes are taking place. Significant major changes cannot be understood in a week, a month, or a year. Such things take place gradually. You need to be well aware of what is taking place in the world and what is happening inside the country.
I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. I wanna thank you for bringing me home.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you.
Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
The Rome-based Islamic Center Imam Mahdi has recently published a book on the late Iranian commander Lieutenant General Qassem Soleimani. Titled A God's Fighter, the Italian language book revolves around General Soleimani's endeavors to defend the oppressed people. A man, quote, driven by an unshakable faith in God. The book is a collection of messages, thoughts, and letters by General Soleimani, a project that has been supported by all the members of the Imam Mahdi Center.
Who did General Soleimani fight for? By publishing this book, we wanted to shed a light on a man who was always described as an anti-something. Yes, he was against Zionism, he fought against Daesh, but he did all that for God, and that's why we call him a God's fighter in our book. This project intends to fill a void in Italy, as for far too long, all accounts on General Soleimani have distorted his true image.
In 2020, 40 days after U.S. assassination of Major General Qassem Soleimani, hundreds of his posters were hung across many Italian cities. Initiatives to honor the slain Iranian military officer were held in Rome and Milan. Imam Mahdi Center's book on Soleimani also contains speeches by the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, and Grand Ayatollah Ali Sistani on General Soleimani's martyrdom. The publication also contains photos portraying Iran's former top military commander.
Finding good quality photos of Soleimani was a daunting task. There are only a few good shots of him around. He was not a poser. He was a humble man and he didn't love to be in the spotlight. My favorite photos are the ones depicting General Soleimani with kids and also his mother.
General Qassem Soleimani, similar to my father, because he caused that I love Islam more and more. He is my hero because he always helped the weak country or a weak Islamic country. I'm proud of him.
The book closes with 20 short stories on the life of General Soleimani, his relationship with his family, and with the late Iraqi anti-terror commander Abu Mahdi al-Muhandis. Max Civili, Rome.
I am visiting a children's hospital in Kabul, which is said to be overwhelmed with malnourished kids. Every few hours, a sick child is brought into the malnourishment ward, while doctors and nurses are racing against time to save the youngest victims of Afghanistan's crisis.
Unfortunately, this year, undernourished cases, especially severe acute malnutrition, have significantly surged compared to last year. Constant hunger and poverty and differing diseases are to blame for this, which puts us in dire need of more supplies and medical aid.
As you know, Afghans are gripped with poverty and economic problems. As a result, we are overwhelmed with a huge number of malnutrition. We are running out of beds and sometimes we are forced to reject new entries. Besides, childhood wasting as well as child mortality have also soared.
The World